the government's just announced stuff about housing. Now, it's way too early for council to have any kind of official
comment.
Right, it probably even not been enough time to read it.
Well, it was only announced yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when Chris Bishop spoke about the changes and the opening up of the ability to create housing at a faster pace, according to him. So I'll be really interested in what impacts that will have on council, because by looking at it initially, it could be seen as overriding decisions of council.
Well, I'm just trying to find the article. I did see that Auckland City had said, nah, we're not into it. We're not going to do that. And Auckland City's got a very right-wing mayor, so it always intrigues me when he goes up against the council, the government, which he has done a few times. So, yeah, I can't quite find the article now where that went to. But, yeah, that's the situation. So for people who don't know, they're loosening up regulations because they hear their belief is that they're blaming councils for the crisis because there's too much red tape. But that's not the cause of the crisis. The cause of the crisis is because of macroeconomic situation that's been created by governments over the last 40 years. But having said that, loosening up some regulations at council level is part of the picture.
But it's not the solution. It's a whole, it's a complex, housing and affordability of housing and land. It's not a simple equation.
No, and they're still relying.
It's not simple to solve, and they're relying, by the look of it, on developers to lead the market again, which means that the everyday people perhaps will be once again disadvantaged, because will it meet the needs of communities in terms of the housing that they need? Because some people, if you've got a bigger family, if you're Māori or Pacifica, for many whānau, they live intergenerationally, so they require bigger houses as opposed to smaller houses. And some people would prefer to live in apartment style, and others may just one or two bedroom smaller home. So hopefully it will meet some of the needs of people who are really in need of housing.
Yeah, well, they've taken the limits off the size of apartments, so they could end up building apartments that are probably the size of student hostel rooms, I guess. Yeah, they could be as small as they want, really. And there's a developer who's come out and said this is going to create some ugly houses. There's a developer saying
that.
Yeah,
well, and they also said, like, the leaky house. The leaky houses that we had, will it lead to poor development as opposed to developments done well?
Well, that's the regulatory situation with the building code and all that, and whether councils enforce it as well.
Yeah, so it depends on the whole framework of what they're proposing and the impacts that it'll have on local communities, the abilities of council to have oversight on what type of buildings there are, and do they meet the code, all of those sorts of things. So it's complex, and until we really understand it, I don't know what impact that will have in terms of local government.
Yeah, and it also, a lot of it's pointed at the cities, but the last agreement, there was an agreement between Labor and National about putting three houses at three stories high.
The 3x3.
Yeah, which National backed out of. At that time, that was going to include not Raglan. Raglan was too small, but like Huntly was big enough.
Huntly and Ngairua Wahia. Yeah. And there was opposition to that because from some of my fellow councillors, and I totally understand this, is that it would create pepper pockets of probably more poverty in some areas. So there was some real concern from fellow councillors around that, even though it was building more in communities, but would it really meet the needs of those who really need housing?
Well, I've Jordan, who you know, my daughter is flatting in Hamilton at the moment near the university, and it's interesting not having been in that part of town for a generation. Half of the little old houses have been removed.
Oh, it's
she's
incredible,
living in
isn't
this
it?
Two-story thing, three units, two stories, only three car parks. Which is, they needed to loosen up the car parking rule, but the result is that every available square inch of footpath has got a car on it now.
Has got a, yeah.
Or, half on the road, half on the car. And the house, it's not a good quality house.
No, they don't look good quality, actually.
And they don't look good, most of them. And by allowing it just to be a normal residential section, but you can have three units on it, is you just end up with this wasted space in between houses. And they would have been better off rezoning the area to have terrace housing with proper, you know, to do it properly.
To do it properly.
Rather than just big, like super big houses. And it's not good. It's not a good quality house. I said to the Jordan's not the one with the agreement with the landlord. So I said to her flatmate, I said, there's a bit behind the sink where they haven't got tiles or anything. And after a year and a half, the water from the sink is already starting to rot out the wall behind it. And I was like, that's not your fault. Don't let the landlord blame you for that. That's poor construction. Like I said,
and also there's no green space. It's awful because there's a footpath and then there's the apartments, like all of the ones on Knighton Road along around that area.
And the green space is wasted because they have to have a metre and a half setback from the boundary between. So there's three metre strips which nobody uses because we don't like terrace housing. But you'd be way better off with a proper set of terrace housing done nicely. And putting all the green space into one block that you could use properly. Like, so Hamilton needs to think about that. I don't know if is that happening in any of the towns in the Waikato district? You don't have to worry about that yet.
Not at this point in time, no.
Okay. But I suppose one day.
Pardon?
It is a solution. Apartments are a solution.
Apartments are definitely a solution, and there are people who would prefer to live in an apartment. It's meeting the needs of the many. So what will that look like? It's providing housing and a variety. And yeah. I attended last year a hui on housing at Claudelands, and it was interesting because there was a woman from Auckland in one of the developments, and the name of it's gone straight out of my head. Anyway, she was a provider for Māori and Pacifica whānau, and she said, you know, this idea of smaller houses without parking spaces just didn't work in their development that they are doing. So
well, it doesn't work where Jordan is. They've got three parks on the property and there's 12 people living there.
Yeah.
Luckily, some of them don't own a car.
Wow.
Because they're students and they walk, but most of them do now.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted. But
That's all right.
Because that's exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, so she was saying they have big houses, so they want 4 or 5 bedrooms. They also, their garage won't be used for cars. It'll actually be used for a whānau area where people can chill out or whatever, you know, because you've got intergenerational living. And then they'll park out on the road because everyone's got a car.
Who puts a car in a garage these days?
Yeah, and she said, so this idea that, you know, there will be a modal shift from cars to public transport or bikes, she said that just didn't work. So they would have 5 or 6 car per family.
We need that concept of 20-minute cities before people will give up their cars.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also,
we don't have that in this country. Our cities are not built like that.
Better public transport where people can actually go to work via public transport rather than taking your cars. So, you know, that's a whole shift. But so it will be really interesting to see what implications this has on local council, going back to the announcement yesterday.
Yeah, because the thing that we've noticed, and that for people, you need to understand that when a house was built, you had to provide one car park per bedroom written in the house. And people would do things like say, oh, this is not a bedroom, this is a study, it's only a 3-bedroom house, and create, I mean, we did that, you know, 3 car parks at our place technically, and then later on you fence bits off and do other things with it. But still there's the capacity, it does exist, to properly serve our house. But in the future, those rules have already changed, haven't they?
Yep. And also,
that's why we're seeing cars parked all over the roadside
all over
now
the road.
That we didn't
and
used
there's
to
no
see.
Off-street, you know, there's no on-street parking as well, you know, so the roads aren't in many cases wide enough to have cars parked on the roadside and then have enough room for,
you should see where Jordan lives, that's what it's like,
the cars to go normally on the road. So you have to park, and we see that in Raglan as well.
But that's this where Jordan is, that their capacity is full for that road to park. I can always get a park down that road when I go there, but it's usually like the last park. So when they knock down the remaining single dwelling houses and turn 3 dwellings into them, which is bound to happen, there won't be anywhere to park on that road. And the road that it comes off is also the same. So yeah, so we're trying to loosen things up, and we needed to a bit, but we need an actual proper plan for what our towns and cities are going to be like.
Yeah.
And I know we're talking about Hamilton, but it is going to affect us here because we don't want. We also want to stop using up farmland.
Yeah,
and although the government's just sorry, the government's just you said actually now you can.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of implications that we've yet to see what that means in terms of our district. Yeah. In our communities, you know, because we've seen in Te Kaiwhata, the development at Lakeside and, you know, the proliferation of the smaller sections and, you know, we've seen there's some development in Ngārua Wahia, like at Festival Way. So, you know, it will have implications for our communities and for Raglan as well. So we'll just have to wait and see over the coming days what that means for us.
Yeah, yeah, okay, all right. We'll park that one because, yeah, it's interesting to chat about, but we can't do much about it. I was just thinking during that conversation that Councillor Tilly Turner comes from a multi-generational house, which reminded me that we now know she's going to be a councillor at least for one more term, but after that, the Māori ward seats, looking at the process the government's mapped out, that could potentially be the end after that.
Yeah, 2028.
So is there a referendum or something happening at this next local body election?
At the next local body election, it actually goes to the binding poll.
Yes, right.
Where the communities, the general constituency, the general voters can decide not to have Māori representation.
So we can vote yes or no to that. That's what's coming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, for the 2025 elections to be effective from 2028.
That's the mechanism that's in place, regardless of what people think. And then after that, if we vote collectively no more Māori wards, then like there will still be – so Tilly –
you can still go into the representing
– she'll still be running for council at the next election.
For the 2025 elections.
Yes, yeah, and simultaneously that poll will happen. So then she'll become the councillor for the next 3 years, and then if the poll says no –
then there will be no Māori representation at 2028. And then at the next representation review, my understanding is after that, you can go back to a poll to establish, you know, you can determine to establish Māori wards again. But again, because there's a binding poll, the constituency can vote yes or no again. So it's just bringing back the provision that was in the legislation.
So
prior to 2021.
It's conceivable, I'm just trying to calculate this, it's conceivable that this government will get thrown out at the next election because we've never seen a government that's like trashing its political capital so quickly. If that happens, it might be a Labour-led government and they would reverse it potentially.
Potentially, I don't know. And I think what we need to do
right?
is really get people out in the 2025 elections, you know, in the next elections for the local body elections, but also for the next general elections. So we really need to gear up for that because if we are voting in 2025 to keep Māori wards or not, if that's particularly for our community, something really important to us, we need to get out and vote in support of maintaining the status quo. And that's something that we really need to focus on for the local body elections. And then, of course, we've got the general elections following that a year later. So, yeah, we have to be really on the ball because even though for the feedback, the submission process for Māori wards, for the Māori Ward and Constituencies Amendment Bill, there was a lot of submissions in that 4 days that was open. I think there was something like 7,000. Mm. And I think there was support for the status quo as it is. So
there might be that now that people have seen what it's like having two Māori ward councillors, it's not quite as terrifying as they thought it was going to be.
Well,
and they're not and so bothered,
two,
by, it. Not so bothered
two,
by it anymore.
It's only two votes out of 14.
I know. It's me in the sense of, I guess the fear is that somehow Māori are taking over the country. There's a lot to unpack there, but we'll just leave that where it is. When you've only got two seats out of 14, two votes out of 14, you're a very long way away from that happening. And even this council has got five Māori councillors?
Five Māori councillors.
Still not enough to take over the council.
No. There's not at all. And also, we sit in general wards. So the three of us who sit in the general wards, we're very conscious of, we are representing the voices of our communities, regardless of
and you'd get reminded if you didn't, I'm sure.
And we do that, and I think we do that really well. But we also bring diversity. We bring you know, each councillor brings their own worldview and their own type of diversity to the decision-making table. So the more diversity in terms of the people who sit at that decision-making table, you know, the better the decisions are made.
So the last election, that was last year, wasn't it, 23? So I was just thinking, but was everyone...
No, 22.
22. There's
the
one exit.
End of 22.
Every councillor I've talked to says it's great having Māori ward councillors because they tap into a part of the community we don't know about. They bring information to the table. I was just trying to think of an example of like a really good example was during COVID. Like we suddenly needed to get in touch with all parts of our community to make sure everyone was all right. And so you probably had access.
Well, when we went into COVID and there was a response, we didn't have Māori wards. Māori wards weren't established until 2022.
So I'm using you as the example as someone who is more tapped into the local Māori community than, say,
The Māori community and Pacific community, they mobilised really quickly to support communities. And we saw that here in Whangaroa when we had Ngā Mero Health here.
True.
Who were supporting with vaccinations and with testing. And they were at the forefront from the get-go. And when we, if you remember, on the Sunday when we had to do testing and vaccinations, it was Kote Pacifica that came out from Hamilton to provide that on the Sunday at very short notice. So, you know, Māori and Pacifica communities were responding to need across the board. And then when there was vaccinations that were happening, whether it was at school or whether it was at the marae, it was the Māori health providers that was doing that, and they were welcoming everyone. It wasn't just for Māori; it was for anyone
of
in our
course.
Community.
Yeah, I mean they're professionals.
You know, so there was no discriminatory.
No, no, I wouldn't be surprised. I wouldn't be surprised if anyone felt like that.
Yeah, it was open to everyone. So that was an example of Māori taking care of everyone. And then even if you look at when Port Waikato had the floodings from Cyclone Gabriel, it was the marae up there that were meeting the needs of communities, you know.
Yeah, they're very useful spaces at times like that. But I was also thinking about, I think it was, because I was kind of tapped into the group of people that were trying to organise stuff during COVID, the informal leadership group, and there were things like people saying, we're going to need to talk to Margaret Dillon because she knows about people who are, like, people who live over in Tiako side of the harbour, and they come and they get their water, like their drinking water, by coming across the harbour, which I didn't know happened. So I'm just trying to reflect there on the importance of being tapped into all the different parts of the community.
Yeah, because then you're tapping into everyone, and then you can reach out and meet those needs of people who are really vulnerable in times where people are worried or when they have higher needs. And so I think we did that really well in our community, even when it was getting out resources to students for school. When we went into lockdown, all of those sorts of things, coordinating with, you know, our civil defence team, with people in our community who are key, that have outreach into parts of community that we wouldn't have outreach into, you know. So, and oftentimes that's through people knowing people, but just that generosity from a marae perspective that's providing for the many. And I think it goes down to, you know, the toy order at Puehakina that Mike Edmonds and his team run when they go down to Te Papatapu, or if they go out to Mai Uenuku, and then I believe they're going further out to Kafia.
Oh, these are these weekend
health clinics.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
That often happen every 2 weeks or monthly. And that's open to everyone, so it's not just Māori. So it's people who are living in country areas that might be isolated. They can go out, they can have, they can see a doctor or a nurse, they can get kai, they have a hot meal, they can do loads of things. So, you know,
so can
that's
I ask,
an example of how the generosity and working together as a community and the advantages of it.
There's also some government funding coming through, I guess, for some of these things. There must be under a health model. That's
I'm not familiar with that.
Yeah, I'm just trying. What I'm trying to think is, there must be a health model put in place, maybe by a Labor government, maybe by the previous National government, but one that this government is likely to potentially get rid of. It just sounds like something they'd want to get rid of.
Yeah, I can't comment on that.
No, I'm just wondering aloud now.
Yeah, you'd have to probably speak to Mike Edmonds or one of his team to get some clarity on that, because I don't know.
Anyway, what I was trying to do before was just reflect on the benefits of diversity and connections to the community for our leadership group, which is our councillors or our community board as well, that diversity is important for it's not woke virtual signalling, it's good for decision making.
It's good decision making, and it's actually,
we've got to remember that.
Yeah, and that's how democracy should work, is that we have we can have as access to as many of the voices that make up our community.
Yeah, yeah. And speaking of voices, have there been voices saying things about the rates and the valuations lately? Have you had any feedback?
Actually, I haven't had. I've only seen a couple on the notice board, but there hasn't been a huge kickback, which I thought there would be, given that it's 11.9% rates increase.
And here in Raglan, it looks like our values have gone up quite a lot compared to the rest of the district, I'd say.
In some places, like ours hasn't. Ours hasn't gone up 21.5%.
But you're on the kind of leasehold situation, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. So that's unusual. I know others who aren't in those situations and their rates haven't gone up that, you know, threshold of 21.3% or whatever it is that makes the mechanism that your general rates go to 11.9%. You know, if you're under that 21%, then it's less likely you're going to pay that much. It's really confusing. Even I find my head getting sore thinking about
what
it is.
There's so many aspects. There's the general rate, which is the thing we talk about. And if your property value goes up,
which is a portion of your dollar value of your,
and that's gone up 11.9%. And if your house value has gone up on average for the district, it will go up 11.9%. But if your house has gone up more than the other houses, it'll go up more.
If it's gone less,
you might actually, you might lower your rates if you're really lucky.
Yeah,
I don't think there's many.
Yeah, there's not many, but you know. Yeah. And then you've got your targeted rates as well. So the targeted rates for our curbside food waste collection, our recycling, all of those sorts of things.
And the wastewater rate is higher actually than the general rate for most of us.
It is. And we made that decision, you know, a number of years ago for the targeted rate for that to incrementally increase to cover the cost.
Because we didn't like shit going in the harbour.
Yep.
And that was basically it, wasn't
and
it?
And I don't know if you've talked about our wastewater trip that we had two weeks ago. That was really great, because I've seen the wastewater treatment plant a number of times. So to see the work just going at a rate of knots is so awesome, and that will have a really bespoke high-level treatment plant by June next year.
So, this is the new treatment plant that produces water that's good enough to wash your hands, clean enough to wash your hands in. Yeah. And the thing that intrigued me is one of the experts there said that if it was chlorinated, this is a hypothetical, I don't want to scare people, if it was chlorinated, it would be classed as fit for human consumption.
Yeah.
So it's actually really, really clean.
And what I was really impressed about,
we're not going to do that because we get it from the beautiful Ricky Springs, which we also got to see. So that's not going to happen. But
and what I really liked when we were in the car with Gil is that he's so experienced.
One of the water care guys.
Yeah, one of the head water care guys who's actually worked in the three water space for decades, actually.
40 years or something or more.
And so he's training up others for the succession planning for when he retires. Because how old is he? 74.
He was well past retirement age, yeah.
Yeah, but they wouldn't let him go. The knowledge is phenomenal. And the work that's being undertaken at our wastewater treatment plant for the treatment of our wastewater when it comes in is going to be just, one step away from drinking water.
And it does raise the question about concerns about what we put into the harbour. And the fact, because big picture, we were going for a land-based wastewater disposal system with a backup option on wet times of putting it into the harbour, into the sea. But the question is, are some people going to now start saying maybe we don't need it if the wastewater
that's a big discussion.
That clean? Yes, it is. And, it's a big one.
And also, you know, looking at now that discharge possibly to Wainui Reserve through a filtering system that way. I mean, it's, the options, it's so great that we have taken time to get to this point, but technology and knowledge grows as the years progress. So we're able to look at hopefully dare I say it, some more affordable options than the option that we had to go nearer to Mangatawhiri Road.
Did we have a number on that?
For if we were to go to Mangatawhiri Road?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, it was like $40 million.
Okay, yeah.
Ballpark. So, you know, that's over and above the $28 million that we are spending on the wastewater treatment plant upgrade.
That's a lot of money for a population that might be up at 4,000 by now, if we're lucky.
It's a lot of money, and it's a targeted rate. So it's to those who use that, who are on that reticulated system that will pay for it. So, you know, those are all of the things that we have to consider around that affordability lens, for our three waters provision. So moving forward, we will have a fantastic wastewater treatment plant that we won't have to have the ponds as the main basis of that.
They kept
treatment.
For overflow purposes,
it's
aren't they?
It's for overflow purposes, but, you know, we won't have that system where they're filtered through now. It'll go through, the state-of-the-art treatment process.
If people are wondering, it basically extracts everything, all the solids out of it.
Oh, and it's like spaghetti. It's quite amazing, actually. And because the way that it's built...
Yeah, the filter is like spaghetti. We've seen it, not the stuff that comes out.
No. It's like spaghetti that's hanging down, and then all of the microbes are coming up through the bottom, and it processes the wastewater and treats it. And, yeah, it's pretty amazing,
and there still
actually.
And we do need to accept that, or understand, that there is a solid product that's been pulled out of the water, and that gets taken to Hampton Downs.
Yeah.
And apparently a special section of Hampton Downs.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not...
The solids, which is all of the
yeah,
the yucky
stuff.
Bits.
Well, and the wipes as well.
Yeah,
like I had a look in that box where there was that step system. Yeah, well, I've got to have a look in there. I said, how gross is it? They're like, I said, can I have a look? They're like, yeah, you can have a look. Mostly consisted, it was grey and yucky, but a lot of wipes in there, like lots of wipes.
Oh, was there?
We've just got to start
our poopy paper.
And a tennis
again.
Ball. There was a tennis ball that got cut up by the propellers that pumped the water.
Because all of the untreated poo and everything that comes from the pumping stations gets pumped through to each pump station, then it gets pumped through to the wastewater treatment plant,
which is up the hill
and
a little bit.
Then it goes through a screening process. So it goes through this machine that separates the solids and everything, and it settles there, and then the water, and that goes through the treatment process through the ponds. That's as basic as I can say.
And we were standing next to that bit I was talking about, and you could hear it be quiet, and then you'd hear this rushing sound, and it was the wastewater coming through because a pump had switched on somewhere in town.
And it was bringing it through. So, did you ever look in it?
Oh, of course I had to.
I couldn't bring myself to do that.
I'm an investigative journalist.
I'm not a
muckraking journalist. No, I'm not. I'm none of those things, but I did think I'd better have a look.
I thought I was pretty good looking when I went out and cleaned the pumps and could see those, but I have never...
It wasn't as gross as I thought it was going to be honest, because it doesn't look like what's in your toilet at all by that point.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah,
it's
mucky and horrible. But
it's stinky, though.
Yeah, I know. I held my breath. okay, so let's talk about pristine and clean water. The water tower, there's a project happening on that water tower to paint it up. What sort of updates have you got on that? When I say paint it up, I mean a mural.
It's still in progress.
Okay.
Yep.
But the government has given us funding?
The DIA.
The DIA, that's the government body?
Yeah, under the umbrella of Raglan Naturally. So it's a collaboration between the Destination Management Organisation, which is the organisation that runs the information hub. So all of the people that you see at the iHub in the front there, they are the volunteers under the Destination Management Organisation. And the Destination Management Organisation also, in conjunction with Raglan Naturally, ran the Matariki Festival that we have just had at the Old Art School and the last...
Yes, the Old School.
Film is on tonight.
Yes, last one tonight, yep.
Te Kōmura from Te Maurito. So you interviewed Tuihana last week, which was awesome. The Water Tower is a collaboration between the Destination Management Organisation and Raglan Naturally. And the DIA has funded a portion of that, and we're just going through the next stages, of which I'm not involved in.
Okay, but they're basically picking an artist or
that's exactly right. Yeah.
And are they going to be given some direction as to what the art will be, or are they given a free hand? Do we know that?
They were given direction, but I'm not involved in that, so I can't tell you any more than that.
That's all right.
You would have to speak to Jacqueline Anderson, because Jacqueline is actually overseeing that, so I don't want to say any more.
That's all right. That's all right. These questions just occurred to
me.
But
it is exciting, so it's not too far away.
And I'm still on the subject of water towers. Is there going to be another water reservoir built somewhere in Raglan?
It's
proposed. What stage is it at? Is it proposed? Is it definitely happening?
It's happening. It is.
It's not being built right now, but the money's there.
And because we have to have more water storage.
And is it going to be?
I don't know.
Somewhere.
I have to get back to it. It's going to be somewhere. Sorry, everyone.
On a hill.
I don't know the details of it.
I'll go to the next Water Governance Board
meeting, actually, which is this month. It's always good to go to those.
And I know you missed the meeting, the Sustainability and Wellbeing meeting, because you're the chair of that. You didn't miss it because you're the chair. There was a bit in that I wanted to ask about. You've tried to find out a little bit about. The only note I got told was there was a public excluded bit for commercial sensitivity for some kind of energy farm. And what information is out in the public domain that we can say about that? That's the one that you were looking at. You dug out that email before.
It was for wind farms.
It was for wind farms?
Yep.
In general?
In general, and looking at where there are proposed wind farms, where there have been approved wind farms, in our district. But I wasn't at that hui, so I can't tell you what was discussed.
Yeah. But did Angeline Greenstall talked about one up in Port Waikato the other day.
There's an application for a wind farm in the far north of the district, and there is opposition from the local community there, hapu, farmers, general community members, because they are actually the proposed wind farm that's there, they're quite big. They're 185 metres high. And in some cases where they're proposing to have the wind turbines is that very close to burial sites and sites of significance for Māori. That is actually out of the hands of council, and it's with the EPA for in the next step of that process.
All right, so at least I know now. It's a wind farm, and it's up somewhere around Port Waikato area.
Yeah, and there are other proposed, because we're such a big district, we're right in the between Auckland, Hamilton, and Tauranga. You know, it's a very desirable area for alternative energy provision. And with there was the COVID-19 part of the fast track bill, and then with the fast track bill amendment that's being proposed, who knows what that might look like in terms of what we will see across the district.
We could see wind farms everywhere, maybe solar farms.
So we've yet to see the results of that. So
does the council get much say about that stuff?
We have a say,
yeah,
but we're not the decision makers.
There's some bylaws under review at the moment. Can we quickly have a look at those?
There are three out at the moment. So we've got the proposed keeping of animals bylaw.
That is
seeking feedback on the keeping of animals. So this is about the rules that outline keeping of animals within the Waikato district. So that's out. And our proposed road closures for motorsport events policy. So we're reviewing our road closures policy for motorsports. So I know that there'll be people who will be interested in that. So that's open now.
People at Ruapuka, you'll want to know about that one.
There'll be people within this community who are really supportive of motorsports events, and then there's obviously others who are not. And then we've got our gambling venues policy as well. So those are the three that are open now. So go online to the Waikato District Council website and you will see those are open for your feedback now.
I had a quick look at the animals one. There's not any serious changes in that. There's just little refinements.
So,
but can people... So the process this is happening, have staff already drawn up a proposal, or is it at the point where people can just send their ideas in?
For the keeping of animals bylaw? No, they're all policies existing. So they're the tweaks on those policies. But the proposed road closures motorsport events policy, that's quite different from our old one. So I would suggest to people to go in there. And if your interest is quipped with that, then I suggest that you go online and read up on that.
I think the motorsport one's going to get more submissions than the other two combined, I suspect.
Possibly.
From
it'll
both
be
sides. Or if people notice, that's the question. And the last thing I just want to mention, there is a transport strategy for kind of the Whangaroa area, I think.
That's exactly right. We've got a workshop that's going to happen in August. It was going to happen in July, but Hazel, our staff member who has oversight on that, she's away.
So the workshop is for councillors?
For the community board.
For the community board, okay.
Yeah.
And then we might hear...
And then it'll go out to the community.
Okay, all right. I think that is everything. Thank you for coming in, Lisa.
Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Go out and enjoy the day. And I'm having 2 weeks off the air because there's all these things broken and I need to fix them and I can't get time to fix them at the moment.
And that's the thing. You actually, at home, if you've got things that need doing, you actually need to take some time off.
Well, this is like this, except...
And because you're so busy as well, Aaron, you know, you're doing heaps of stuff. And just a reminder, if you have an interest, we have the Te Kumara beautiful film on tonight at the Old Art School, 6 p.m. to 7:30, with some short films from Te Marito as well. So really looking forward to people coming along and joining us. And that is part of the Matariki Festival.